sorry.
Yes. Okay, hang on a moment. This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We have had a busy day here. We just had our first free webinar for all of our 20,000 Facebook fans.
And you can download that webinar all week. And we're talking about how do you parent boys in this culture.
Seriously.
And you can go to raisingrealmen.com/celebrate and sign up to download that recording and enter all the great giveaways there.
That was good. We had a great conversation. And I tell you what, we're going to just continue the discussion because we talked about the challenge and the blessing of raising sons and understanding how our sons behave and why. But a big aspect of that, and you know, this is the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, well, you know, a big aspect of that is how do you teach them? How do you educate these young fireballs that we're raising? And, you know, it's a homeschooling question, but it's really not. It's a question about education, period.
It really is, because even if you don't homeschool, you still have to deal with getting them to do their homework and helping them engage in school. And frankly, institutional schools aren't very boy-friendly right now.
No, they're not giving us a whole lot of help. And, you know, I guess we got our real initiation. First off, we had a precocious reader.
Oh, yeah. He was a great homeschool student at first. Our oldest was one of these kids who dreamed about, Mama, please teach me to read.
I know. And, you know, we started off with him. I remember we had read all the books by the Moores, Raymond and Dorothy Moore, and they said, you know, boys develop more slowly. You don't rush them into academics.
So we were prepared to wait forever, but he was begging us early. So we went ahead, started him early.
Yeah.
And he did great. Then he got to be about 9 years old, and oh, my word, the wheels fell off.
Absolutely. I mean, just went completely off the tracks. And, you know, at first we thought, man, this homeschooling is great. We're brilliant. Our child is a genius, and it's wonderful. And then you got to 9 years old, and we said, no, we're not. We're idiots. And our child is going to the reform school, not to graduate school.
It all came to a head for me.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the van one night, and we were coming home from some event. And we were listening to Gilbert and Sullivan. You know, we love Gilbert and Sullivan. It's comic opera. Written over 100 years ago, but it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember how a certain song came on the air?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were listening to, I think it was, actually it was a greatest hits kind of thing. It wasn't a particular one of those comic operas, but we heard the Major General song come on. And if you haven't heard that, I'll give it a try. It kind of runs like this. I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. And I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations, both the simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I am teeming with a lot of news and many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. I'm very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and animalculus. In short, it matters vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general.
And he said, wow, I can't wait till I know all that stuff. And I hit the roof. I completely lost it.
That was a moment of truth, I think.
I said, well, you know what? We will get to all that stuff if we ever get out of the fifth grade.
Yeah. Ooh, that stings.
And you know what he said? He said, what do you mean? And I said, son, look, I can drag you through addition and subtraction. I can drag you through multiplication and division. I can even drag you through fractions and decimals. But I cannot drag you through differential calculus.
Right.
And the next day, he woke up, mm-hmm. and he said, Mama, would you give me a list of all the schoolwork I'm expected to do in a day? And when I recovered consciousness, I gave him that list, and mm-hmm. he finished his schoolwork for the first time in months.
Yeah.
And that was, I learned a lot about homeschooling boys that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a turnaround time for us. I learned, you know what? They are different than I am. They're motivated differently.
Why does that surprise us? And yet, you know, we hear this all the time from homeschooling mothers. You know, they are just perplexed because their sons are not taking to this education thing like their sisters have done. And it doesn't matter if their sisters are older or younger. You know, moms come up to us all the time and they're saying, I just don't understand it. He won't sit still. He can't concentrate. It takes him forever to finish things. And his sister just finishes worksheet after worksheet, and she colors little flowers in the margins, and it's all neat, and his work is a mess. And you know, they're exasperated because, well, you know, frankly, they're exasperated because their little boys are not acting like the little girls.
And, you know, they're not supposed to be.
No.
Now, you have to be careful, though, to recognize that when we describe boy behavior, not all boys will fit that list, and they won't, and it'll change through their lives. Some of those times they'll be more typical boy than other times, but even if they're very atypical boy, they still are a lot more boy than they are like you, Mom, and that is hard.
That's right. The most sensitive boy on the planet is still more like his dad than he is like his mom. And so, you know, we got to take that stuff into account and recognize, you know, stereotypes, there's two aspects of it. One thing is we call them stereotypes and we say, well, you know, that doesn't cover all the cases. But the reason that they exist is because there's an element of truth to them as well.
Right.
So you got to kind of take both extremes with a grain of salt. So,
and when we share ideas, please understand, we're not telling you what to do. God made you the parent of your home.
Right.
And he gave your particular child to you.
Yeah.
So if we share an idea that doesn't make sense for your family, throw it out.
Yeah.
Everything we say compared to the Word of God.
Yeah.
And if we differ from the Word of God, we go with the Word of God.
Right.
Okay?
So, yeah, so that's kind of a provision. Well, you know, one of the things, we read all of the stuff that said, they're late bloomers, and that's natural. And don't
girls
push
develop
them.
Earlier than boys. And
right.
That's not quite true. Girls develop in areas that help academically earlier than boys.
Well, in areas that help traditional school academics,
yeah.
Let's say.
Like,
the schoolroom behavior is different. And
for example, girls develop earlier in their ability to sit still and control their body.
And to make small motor motions.
And to make
motions.
Small motor motions like you do when you write.
Uh-huh.
And they tend to be verbal earlier. Boys develop more quickly than girls in their large motor skills. You see, I remember having, when one of our boys was two, he could pitch a baseball right at your chest, hit you every time.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You know, I couldn't do that when I was 12.
Yeah, very active and very precise in their big activity.
Yes, and boys develop earlier than girls in their spatial reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see boys build these huge Lego or Duplo cities or block cities and towers and roads and streets. Now, of course, then they stomp through it and they pretend to be Godzilla and tear all the pieces.
That's another little aspect of boy behavior.
But boys develop more slowly in the areas that we associate with typical schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good news is, please remember this.
Mm-hmm.
That boys come into their own academically in high school because that reverses when we get to high school. When we get to the high school age, the girls have plateaued academically.
Yes.
You know, where they're not gaining new ability. They're learning more, but they're not gaining new ability in the academic areas.
Yeah.
Whereas the boys are. And so you'll see a boy who at 11, 12 years old can't finish a math lesson in 5 hours and has zero interest in school. Is at 16 is saying, you know, I am just fascinated by philosophy. I found this philosophy book and I can't stop reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not made up. This happened this week.
Yeah, true story.
True story from this week.
Right.
And so you've got to accommodate for that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're teaching science, teach science. If you're teaching writing, teach writing. Teach what you're teaching.
Well, okay, now that is a key understanding. And a lot of times we lose track of that. A lot of times we never thought of it. But I remember you got a call. You got a call from a mom one time who said, "My son just hates science."
And I said, "What? Because that's very unusual.
Guys like science usually. So why would they hate science?"
And
what did she say about that?
And I said, "Well, what in particular does he say? Oh, he hates answering questions at the end of the book." Well, hello, I hated that too.
True, but
and I said,
it's
"Well,
more so.
Why are you making it? Is he writing them out?" And she said, "Yes, and he just, it takes him forever, and he hates it, and he cries." And I said, "Well, why don't you ask him the questions orally?"
"Ooh, is that legal? Can you do that?
Is that cheating?" she said. And I said, "Well, what's the point of answering the questions? To find out what he knows. Well, why do they have them write it down in the schools? But it's because the teachers can't ask 30 kids a bunch of questions.
They don't have time to do oral exams for a whole room full of kids.
But there's no reason you can't with your son."
Oh. And so realizing that the handwriting was hanging him up, it wasn't his ability to understand science, which is what she was trying to teach him.
Right. And to teach what you're teaching.
Yeah.
So if he's ninth grade and he's going to be taking AP exams in a couple of years, where he's going to have to write those
essays
by hand.
Timed essays.
Yeah, but he needs to be pushing a pencil across paper.
Yeah, you're going to have that skill. But
it was very hard for us and our sons to recognize that handwriting and writing are two different things.
Yeah, that's the inaccuracies of our language. What we're really talking about is composition, the verbal communication skill in words, in printed, you know, printed readable words rather than eloquence coming out of their mouth.
Yeah, we've written several books. I haven't written one word of them by hand.
You know, the only time we have written something with a pen or a pencil is when we've done, like, mind mapping exercises. You know, we're trying to organize a chapter or something, and we've got all these bubbles and lines and stuff. But as far as writing a paragraph and punctuating it, it's all done on a keyboard. And, you know, that's an interesting point, because we've had a couple of sons who've had some learning challenges.
Severely dyslexic and dysgraphic.
Well, and see, that's a lot of times you haven't heard the term dysgraphia. We've got one son who is not dyslexic. He reads faster than any human being I've ever met. But handwriting is very difficult for him. And we didn't really discover the key to his problem until an uncle gave him an old used laptop. And suddenly realized he could put together words and stories and narratives and everything.
Well, being an eighth grader,
mm-hmm.
who would absolutely come unglued if you asked him to write a paragraph.
Right.
To within a couple of months of my brother giving him that laptop, he was writing a novel for National Novel Writing Month, 15,000 words in a month.
That's right.
You know, and I thought, what in the world? But see, it used a different part of his brain to type than it did to handwrite.
Right. So the keyboarding freed him up to communicate verbally, whereas forcing him to use a pen or a pencil, tied him down to that one skill that he had difficulty with.
That really opened my eyes. And so when his younger brother, who was severely dysgraphic and dyslexic, got to be old enough to compete in we have statewide history contests for public, private, and homeschool.
Yeah.
And his older brothers had won lots of awards writing essays.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to write an essay.
Yeah.
But he couldn't. I mean, he really could not. So I called him up and I said, "Well, can he dictate his essay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the situation." They said, "Sure, no problem. Let him dictate. He has to do his own research, and you have to type exactly what he says."
Mm-hmm.
He won first place in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, and so the idea of composing a narrative or a paragraph or a reasoned argument or whatever, that was not the problem. That was not difficult. It was sheerly this mechanical skill. Which, of course, you need that skill, but that's not what was being taught at that particular moment.
So, for heaven's sake, don't make your son hate writing because he's struggling with handwriting. You know what? We need to take a little break. Let's talk for just a minute about a big celebration we've got coming up in 2 weeks.
You know, we already,
2 weeks?
Yes, it's 2 weeks and a little bit over.
Yes,
because after much, 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 much work and delay, our second book is finally coming out, officially releasing on Valentine's Day.
Whee!
Yay! Is our book on marriage. This is called My Beloved and My Friend.
How to be married to your best friend without changing spouses.
I like the subtitle. Yeah. Well, because, you know, the point we found is as we talk to families and, you know, couples all over the place, a lot of times we find that the troubles that couples experience in their relationship are basically things which they would know better if it was a friend from church or the community or coworker or something. There's certain things that are just a matter of being a good friend. And, you know, the first thing that God tells us about marriage is it's not good for the man to be alone. I'll create a helper suitable for him or corresponding to him. It's all about, it's companionship. That's the first reason that God gives us for the institution of marriage, is because man needs a counterpart. He needs a friend.
And there are very few people talking about how do you be friends in your marriage. And yet that's what, one of the major reasons for marriage. And so that's what we want to talk about, is how to make your marriage holy, happy, and a lot more fun.
Right. So that's our book. And we're going to be doing a big celebration this week.
Yes, it starts 2 weeks from tonight.
Not this week. It's 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks from tonight.
Yes.
And we are going to do a Facebook party that night.
Right.
And we're going to do a live call-in program on this radio show.
That is, yep.
And then we are going to have blog giveaways from all our publishing friends, from tons of great homeschool publishers all week long on blogs all over the internet, and on our blog, celebrating it and coming up for the release on Friday, Valentine's Day.
The 14th.
And we are just so excited about this. And so we want you to keep your eyes open. Make sure you're signed up for our newsletter. If you're not, raisingwomen.com/newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up for Facebook. It'll be on Facebook.com/raisingwomen, so you'll find out about it, because you won't want to miss this. It's going to be a blast.
That's right. Starting 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks from tonight.
February the 10th.
We're going to do a Facebook party and then this radio program right afterwards.
Outstanding. Well, okay, so we're talking about the developmental differences. There is such a thing as developmental delays.
There really are.
Yeah.
And the encouraging – well, let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
I remember Mom coming up to me at, I think, the Pennsylvania conference.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't know what to do. I don't think my son's ever going to learn how to read. And the poor kid was standing there next to her.
Yeah, that's really encouraging.
Like,
thanks,
he
Mom.
He wanted to fall into the floor, and I felt horrible. So I bent down and I said, son, let me tell you something. If a boy learns to read when he's 5 years old, you know what? He learns to read like an adult when he's about 13, 14. I said, you know what? If a boy learns to read when he's 7, he learns to read like an adult when he's 13 or 14. If a boy learns to read when he's 9, this boy was about 9.
Yeah.
He learns to read like an adult when he's 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
If a boy learns to read when he's 11,
yep,
he learns to read like an adult when he's about, and the little boy said, 13 or 14?
Yeah.
I said, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to worry, because when you come into your own academically late, you learn fast. And it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's a good illustration.
I think that was a very good illustration. I was reading a book called Christ in the Camp. It's a really interesting historical book written right after the war between the states. And it's about the revival that went through the Southern armies, in like 1864, 1865. And one of the chapters deals with the work of the coal porters, which is the men who went around to the camps and the hospitals and took Bibles and books, tracts, reading material. And this revival is underway, and so men are being saved, and a lot of these men were basically right off the farm. They didn't have much education, if any, and now suddenly God's given them a new heart and a new spirit and a hunger to read the Word of God for themselves. And so the coal porters and the chaplains are trying to give reading classes to these young men, finally having to recruit other soldiers to help. But one of the things they discovered was that they take these young guys, these 23, 24-year-old men who really couldn't read at all, and within about 3 months, they could teach a man how to read the King James Version of the Bible for himself. Okay, you're talking about 90 days from flat illiterate,
making an X for their name,
to reading the King James Version. And, you know, most of us would look at that and say, how in the world? You know, it takes us years to teach our sons how to read, to get them to read well. So, well, the answer is You're training an adult's mind.
And so when your boys learn late, they tend to learn faster because their brains are more developed.
Right.
Now, a couple of things, though. Homeschooling provides tremendous flexibility for that.
And that is one of the things which makes this so good for boys.
Because if he's struggling in one area, you don't have to hold him back.
Yeah.
We had a son who didn't learn to read until he was 11. And yet he was kept on track for all his subjects by us reading his problems to him and helping him out.
Yes, and we got like the science textbooks were available in audio format. Like we used Apologia Science. And all of their upper-level textbooks, you can get audio versions, okay? And so that kind of thing, it feeds the mind of your student, okay? It allows them to learn and to grasp the concepts and science or whatever else you're reading while they get this processing issue sorted out. And you know what? Yeah, he didn't start to really read until he was 11, but by the time he was 13, he's reading great. And he reads great elaborate stuff now, you know.
He's the one reading the philosophy books.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, that's not.
He came in talking to me about Rousseau the other day.
Yeah.
The social contract. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, he wants to compare Rousseau and Locke and you know, the founders and all the rest of it.
And at 10, he didn't think he would ever want to read.
That's right. And so, you know, take heart and recognize that homeschooling gives you the flexibility to teach in a way that is most effective and most sensitive for your guy. Like, you know. Our guys have an entirely different way of grappling with a subject. I think I use that word advisedly.
Well, I remember going to a college visit one time. I think we visited Hampton Sydney College, which is one of the few remaining all-men's colleges in the nation.
Right. They got a really good economics program.
And we went, he visited, and they asked him, did he want to sit in on a class?
Oh, yes, sir. I'd love to sit in on a class.
He went and sat in on an economics class.
And he came back, we were sitting there chatting with the department head. He comes back in pumped up. I mean, he was saying, Mom, oh, Dad, that was the most incredible class. You would not have believed it. It was just fantastic. And the professor put a proposition up on the board, and he's explaining that the students start asking him questions. And he called one of them a knucklehead, and they're arguing with him, and he threw an eraser at somebody, and the students are shouting, and oh, it was awesome. Everybody, it was just incredible. I love it.
And this is good how?
See, and Mom doesn't get it, but we were just having this discussion in our webinar earlier this afternoon. Young men approach a subject, and they want to grapple with it. They want to master it.
They want to debate it. They want to argue about it. They want to interact with it.
Yeah.
They want learning to be active
and
engaged.
Yes.
Now, this is very different from girls. Okay, a girl learns best typically in a quiet, softly lit, warm, nurturing environment. Mm. Do you know what happens if you put a boy in that kind of environment?
Back to the womb. It's time to go back to sleep.
They go to sleep. Yeah, boys learn best typically in a bright, loud,
emphatic,
cool environment.
That's right. In a more engaged fashion, you know, listen to how people read things. How do you read to a child that you want to go to sleep? You read it very quietly and in a monotone, very gentle, soothing tones. And that'll put a little boy to sleep.
Like I had a friend tell me, don't raise your voice to your boys, Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
You should speak softly so that they have to listen for their mother's beautiful voice. I tried that.
Beautiful or not, but they're going to sleep.
They never heard me.
No, they wouldn't.
Yeah, if they were present, they went to sleep. If they were walking by, they just kept going. They never heard it.
And, you know, and I tried this experiment with one of our little girls. We had boys first, and then little girls came along. And our little three-year-old was charging through here at full bore one afternoon, and I said, hey, Katie, come here. Oh, boy, she stopped in her tracks. I said, I've got a secret. Oh, man, she's right there with me. What is it? Okay, because she's tuned into that quiet voice, and especially if there's a secret. Ooh, that's exciting. But, you know, the boys, they want to hear it with some emphasis. They want to know, does this make sense? Are you willing to defend this? Can it even be defended? You know what? You might try that. As you're trying to explain something to your sons, as you're reading things to them, they will hear and understand and respond better if you vary your tone, if you use a little more emphasis in your reading, and it won't hurt your daughters to hear a little bit more emphasis anyway. And, you know, part of it is, I think we men tend to be really focused, okay? I think that's a good thing. It allows us to concentrate. But I know if one of my sons comes up to me, one of my children comes up while I'm on the computer, I've got my eyes locked on that screen. If I don't, like, grab myself by the nose and turn and make eye contact, then they can have a whole conversation with me, and I might give them reasonable responses and have no more memory of even talking to them or even seeing them. There's a scene in The Incredibles, fantastic movie. The Incredibles, where Mr. Incredible comes home from work, bad day, and he's all distracted about his troubles with his job, and the kids are going crazy around the dinner table, and his wife finally calls to him, and she says, "Bob, time to engage." You know what? That is very typical. We guys have a hard time focusing if something doesn't get our attention. And so we've got to take the steps necessary to get our guys' attention. And sometimes that may be burning off a little bit of excess energy. Okay? And we talked about that some in the previous session too, as a matter of discipline. But, you know, really, when your guys get fidgety and restless and can't finish a lesson, that is not the time to double down and say, "Hey, son, you know, we've just got three more sections to go, and then we'll have lunch. Let's just concentrate and focus here for another 30 minutes. You know what? That 30 minutes will last you all afternoon, or it feels like it." You'd do much better to say, "Okay, let's take a quick break. How about let's run up and down the stairs? Give me 10 laps on the stairs.
Let's do push-ups." You know,
push-ups are good.
The activity, the research really shows that when boys use their large muscle groups, they learn better afterwards.
And that's why recess is not just playtime. It's important. It resets the brain to absorb more academic work.
Well, I hear mom saying all the time,
"Yeah,
oh, our son bogged down about 10 o'clock. And I tell him, honey, we only have three more subjects.
Yeah, I know.
Let's
try
to finish them before lunch." And,
that's right.
How does that
work for you, ma'am?
Yeah, and she says, "We can't get one of them done."
No, you can't.
You need to stop and let him use his big muscles. Let him run.
Mm-hmm.
Read him a story while he flops around on the floor. Let him do something to use those muscles and get the wigglies out, because else he's going to use every bit of his brain to sit still, and there's going to be nothing left to learn with.
It's kind of like when you're on that long stretch of interstate between the rest areas and you, like, really need to find that rest area. And after a period of time, it takes every bit of your concentration to remain continent and capable of driving. Anything else is driven out because you're concentrating so hard on that. And that's the way our guys get.
Well, they do.
They don't get enough activity. It doesn't have to be formal exercise.
No.
Just movement.
And oddly enough, the most easily distracted guys are also the ones that are distracting everybody else.
Yes.
You know, it's the one who can't keep still. If there's something anywhere within his feet, he's kicking it. You know, and then he'll yell, "I can't handle it. Everybody's making too much noise. I can't concentrate."
Yep.
Yeah, and you just feel like you're going to go crazy. We've had boys that would interrupt themselves. I'm serious. Like, "Mom, okay, when you take 4,458 divided by, what is that bird doing out there?"
Yeah, squirrel. That was the thing. The movie Up was so brilliant when that the dog goes squirrel and runs off in his head there.
Yeah,
that's
the way boys
male
get.
Behavior, you know.
And you know, they are different. Like, I think about how if a woman experiences discomfort or pain, she tends to shut down.
Yeah.
And forget all about it afterwards.
Right. Yeah.
That's how the species keeps going, right?
That's right. You get over the pain. You don't have a real good memory of it.
But when guys experience discomfort, they tend to concentrate better. So, like, have you ever noticed your guys chewing their pencils or the collar of their shirt? Oh, the collar of their shirt.
T-shirt belonging to a 10-year-old is a revolting thing. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the boys and the girls. And, you know, those differences really become pronounced when they get to be about 9 to 12 years old, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that a good segue?
Yeah. So let's talk about
that. Like Paul Harvey would say, we'll just segue right into this commercial, you know?
Yeah.
Talk about it for a minute. We found when our son got to be 9 years old, our expectations, our reality shifted seriously. And it wasn't until about the third one that we started to realize, oh,
this is a stage.
this is something that's normal. And guess what? They do recover from it.
Because you start seeing changes between the 9 to 13 phase before
right.
you see physical changes.
That's right.
They start having these emotional ups and downs.
That's right. But we didn't know what to expect. And so we put together a webinar, a five-week webinar series called Boot Camp 9 to 12.
And okay. all the things I wish I had known back then.
Yes. And you know what? It's fascinating. We've had over 300 families come through this with us. And every single time people say, I can't believe you don't have a camera in my house. You mean it's not just us? No, it's not just you. This is normal for raising a son. But nobody ever tells you that.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. Nobody tells you. You know, you'd think people would warn you before your perfectly ordinary son turns into the Hulk.
But you know what? The practical experience side of it, if people have two kids, they don't learn the same thing as watching it over and over again.
Sure.
And so when they only have two, when they have a boy and a girl, and that boy goes through this stage, they think, man, that boy was hard to raise. They don't realize they're all that way at that age, but you can work through it.
And it can be great.
And it can. So we encourage you, come out and look at our website, raisingrealmen.com/bootcamp. We've got this webinar series. It's actually in progress right now. We're going to be running it again in April, and it's going to be good.
So head out and sign up while there's still room.
Mm-hmm.
We like to keep it small so that we can interact with you and answer all your questions.
Yep.
You're going to love it, though. It is a blast.
It really is good. So raisingrealmen.com/bootcamp. Okay.
Yes.
Well, you know, one thing we've heard something a million
constantly.
Times, I think, and we probably have thought it ourselves.
I think he must be hyperactive.
Yes. And you know what?
Now, and, you know, there is an extreme. Okay. We've got one of those. Okay?
Yeah. And we've got
if he doesn't have constant stimulation, he falls over asleep.
It's kind of like coffee relaxes him. He needs
yeah.
something to like push him over an edge or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we hear it a lot of times because, frankly, moms are former girls. They are not used to the way boys behave, especially if they didn't have brothers. And they don't realize that all of the noise and activity and busyness and fidgeting is kind of normal male behavior, particularly in younger males. Now, you recognize they do need to learn to sit in a desk. They do need to learn to do schoolwork for extended periods of time. And that does come about. But when you know what, when they're 7 or 8 or 9 years old, it's very hard. And they're like that, you know, that ride on the interstate or the dog with the milk bone balanced on its nose, you know, all concentration is right there on that milk bone. That's all I can do is to hold myself in this chair. Don't ask me to think. Don't ask me to work hard. I can't do anything but sit still. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, because you're a home educator, you've got the freedom to define what's normal.
Well, a lot of guys like to work standing up. You know, Jefferson did that. Winston Churchill dictated all of his books. He wrote enough to fill a huge bookshelf,
right.
pacing back and forth.
But he wasn't really writing, was he? Because he was dictating.
He was writing.
He was writing it. Yes, of course, if I knew he was writing. You know, Ernest Hemingway wrote standing up. I mean, so what about that? Maybe your son needs to stand up a little bit.
Maybe he needs to do his math at the kitchen counter.
Or on a whiteboard or a blackboard or something like that.
Well, a lot of our boys have found that's helpful. I know several of them, one studying calculus and one studying Chinese at the college level, got huge whiteboards and wrote on. You know, you can go to Lowe's or someplace like that and get a big, like, white panel, white panel. What's
I think
it called?
It's melamine.
Melamine?
It's like a tempered hardboard on the back, but it's got a slick, white, kind of plastic laminate surface.
You can get it for like $25 on like a 4x8 piece.
Yeah, 4x8 foot sheet. Okay.
Yeah.
It works fine. It's a great whiteboard. And when you finally wear out the finish on it, you just take it out, spend another $25 and get another one. It's perfect.
It's great. And so those big motor muscle movements are great for learning hard things.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't worry about, oh, I don't have any record of his math. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're in the worst state for homeschooling, they still don't ask you to keep all his math records.
We had a son who went to Oxford University, okay? Nobody ever asked let me see a copy of your fifth grade math.
Nobody ever
asked for papers that he wrote in the seventh grade. Okay?
Yeah.
Honestly, just do the work necessary for them to learn the subject, but don't obsess about stuff that's not going to be important. You know, it's really important. What's important is making sure that those guys not only get the information, but understand why they need that information.
Oh, that's so important for boys because, you know, girls typically, again, and you know, there's exceptions, want to please you. You know, mommy wants me to do this. Let me get a gold star from mommy. Boys want to know, how does this fit the real world? Like, you remember you were telling me that during, that you saw a study where they interviewed first grade boys and girls, but we were looking at boys, about their attitudes about school. Now, I don't know why they asked them, but anyway, the things the boys said, it cracked us up because it sounded
it was just like the grown-up men that I worked with when I was in a corporate engineering job. You know, we'd come into a conference room, we'd sit down, and we'd look around at each other, and we'd say, well, here we are. I wonder why we're here. Is this going to be relevant for the rest of the day? Are you going to waste my time? Are you going to tell me something that I need to know? You know, go ahead and impress me. I reserve the right to make a judgment about it later after you've impressed me. Okay. And you know what? Our young men are the same as the grown-up men in that respect. They need to see a connection between what you're trying to teach them and the world as they foresee it. Now, obviously, they don't have a lot of perspective, but that's one of the things we can do. You know, we've got one of those great examples, you know, is the person who comes up and says, hey, I'm going to study blank. Why should I have to take a class in something else? I was the same way when I was in engineering. Why did I have to take English literature?
Because you need to be able to express yourself and be able to write grant proposals and to be able to write reports to your superiors. And, you know, you need to be able to understand the way the world works.
Yeah.
And in the same way, a literature major who doesn't understand math is going to be in trouble with a checkbook in a short period of time.
Yeah. You know, there's certain skills that we just need. And
besides that, they're going to need them to get into college. And that's when you can, you know, if you ask your son, what do you want to do when you grow up? Now, if he's 11.
I want to design video games. I want to do computer animation. That'd be the coolest thing ever.
Well, and like one in a million, okay? But don't criticize him at this point. Instead, just say, well, let's look and see what it takes to get into a program like that.
Mm-hmm.
What you find out is it's hard. There's a lot of kids that want to do that.
And the people that are in those programs will tell you there's a lot more to it than you might imagine.
And so you say, boy, you're going to need a lot of math. You're going to have to learn calculus to do that. To learn calculus, you got to get this fraction stuff down pat, son. Changes his motivation for doing fractions.
Well, I think one of the best examples of this I heard was I have a friend, my roommate from college, went on, got his doctoral degree. He's now a tenured professor in engineering down at Auburn University. And he said that, you know, part of his summer work is going out doing contract research and development work for different, you know, agencies and companies and such. And he said, you know, I am a hammer in search of nails. I have all these upper level mathematical, engineering, analytical skills, and I'm looking for problems I can apply them to. Okay? And that's the thing we need to show for our guys is that it's one thing to be able to do to calculate an area of a drawing in a book, but it's so much cooler to say, son, we're going to have a room that's 10 feet square and has walls 8 feet high, and we want to put a quarter inch of plaster on all of those walls. What volume of plaster are we going to need to buy? Oh, man, that'll keep them busy for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and so when you give them the real-world applications for what they're learning, it's incredibly motivating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boys like to conquer things, too. And so it's important to give them a list, to tell them what's expected, to give them some motivation. You know, when you're done with this, you've got some free time until it's short time.
Well, and that's the trick. You've got to give them the reward. You know, you can't say the reward of hard work is more hard work. No, that's not the way. That doesn't motivate them.
Right.
They need to know, hey, I've achieved a goal, and now that I have done my duty, I have time for myself. I can invest it in something else. Okay, so you gotta respect that and give them some time when they have earned it. Okay, that's a hard thing to do because you think, hey, we can get ahead. We can go that much faster. That's not
so much.
And not for long if you keep that up.
You know, I think it's important to recognize that boys really need to think about the future. They need to think about why they're doing things. They need motivation. And motivation is not the same as mine. One of those things that is really different, we talked about how men and women react to pain differently.
Mm-hmm.
Women react to stress differently.
Well, stress is kind of like, I mean, pain is a stressor. But yeah, you know, I know, okay, we like Saxon math in the earlier grades. And Saxon math does lots of problems. It's like lots of physical exercise. You do lots and lots of problems and workouts and such, and it builds up your math muscles in your brain. And a lot of times we hear the moms look at it and say, oh, that's so many problems, son. You don't need to do all of those. You don't need to do this against the clock. I'm not going to make this a time test. You take all the time you need, son.
Well, we don't want them to feel bad, Hal.
I know.
See, that's the thing for me. And that's really what I struggle with.
I guarantee you.
Like, I think about when our guys have gone to National Geographic Day.
Right.
You know, the state level.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it. It makes me physically ill. I'm so afraid they're going to make a stupid mistake and they're going to hate themselves. I don't want to throw my guts off.
You know what? If you tell that boy he can take as long as he wants to on his math, he will. Every time.
It'll be awful.
It'll drag on forever. And
it has been hard for me to realize that they would rather lose than not compete at all.
You know, the thing, this was a key for us with our young guys. When they got to be about 9 or 10, the eternality of math became a real diagnostic thing. You know, so, okay, suddenly math is taking 3 hours to finish that problem set. Okay, he must have hit that prepubescent period we worried about. Well, you know what? I found out when they'd start doing that, if you just time them, if you just put them against the timer and say, okay, you've got 1 hour to do this problem set. You know what? They will. And it'll keep them focused. It's amazing. Even if they don't know, you know, I've got to do this, and every problem has got 2 minutes maximum to do. You know, they don't even need to know that. Just to say, you've got 1 hour, and I'm watching you go.
Yeah.
And so we started doing that with our guys when they get to the slows like that.
Oh,
just bring them in, set them beside Dad's desk, and let Dad time them while Dad's working, and he's working across the desk from him. And it's just wonderful because they respond to that little bit of extra stress,
that little bit of
oomph that strengthens the backbone. You know?
Yeah, and it motivates them tremendously. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn. You know, I wasted a lot of days because I didn't learn that lesson.
So you know what? A little bit of timing, a little bit of stress, a little bit of competing against the clock. You know, see if you can do better than your best time on this worksheet or this essay or, you know, whatever things you're doing. There's some things you can't really adapt to time pressures like that, you know, but the point being, competing against some kind of standard.
Yeah.
Whether it's see if you can type this many words per minute without an error, or see if you can write me an essay with no grammatical
or
mistakes.
Even can you do it a little bit faster than you did it yesterday?
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter if the reward is something worth having. It can be a gummy bear or raisin.
Oh,
it's
gummy bear.
It's the winning of it.
Yes. I got the gummy bear. Okay. Yeah. And so you take that into mind. Young mothers, your sons will thank you. They benefit from the stress and the challenge. Now,
yeah, let's talk a minute about something brand new we're doing for young families.
Oh, speaking of young mothers.
I'm so excited about this. People, we've done boot camp 9 to 12 for several years, and we put that together because just we got so many questions about
the age range. We found that the boys in that age were falling through the gap because everybody talked about starting homeschooling and teaching them phonics and basic reading. And everybody, and people worried about high schools and transcripts and college preparation and all. But those guys, the kind of middle school age, you know, they were just sort of adrift out there in space. And so we started talking about the 9 to 12s. But
people have been begging us to do something for younger kids.
Because they realize, hey, you know, they were different before they hit 9 years old, and I, I would probably like to know better how to handle the younger brother.
Our culture's become worse and worse on the issue of manhood.
Yeah.
And the challenges have become more and more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with video games and screens everywhere. And it's become harder. So we put together something we call Boyhood Boot Camp.
Yes.
And it's for parents. It's for mom and dad.
Okay.
And it's, you know, find out how your boys are thinking, what the Word of God says about it, some advice from people who've been there before. We've been through that stage 6 times now.
Yes.
And even the dimmest bulb begins to show some light when you've been through something 6 times.
Hmm. Okay.
And so we just would love to invite you to sign up. We're doing the very first one. We're starting it in just, I think it's 3 weeks from Wednesday.
February 17th.
February 17th. It's called, go to raisingwomen.com/boyhood and sign up for Boyhood Boot Camp. It's for parents of boys about up to age 8. And we're going to talk about discipline. We're going to talk about schoolwork. We're going to talk about how do you know when they're ready for formal schooling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you, you know, when do you teach them to write and read? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about play and discipline and respect and all things boy and media choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so come join us. This will be the very first time we've done it. We're really excited about it.
We're planning for 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
4 weeks starting
four once a week sessions.
On Monday afternoon. So these are going to be in the afternoon.
Yes.
And so not in the evening time this time. So
yes.
Starting Monday, February 17th. And you can find that on our website at raisingrealmen.com/boyhood.
And if you're busy on Monday afternoons, it's all going to be recorded so you can download it and listen to it when you want to.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about a few last things here.
You know,
no,
we
boys
have,
hate to ask for help.
Part of the guy code, you do not ask directions.
It means you're vulnerable.
You don't ask help. That suggests that maybe you don't know. Maybe you're not confident in some way. And you really got to get it through our sons, especially when they're still students, that you don't go to class to prove to the professor how much you already knew.
You go to class to learn.
You want to learn everything you can from that instructor or from that book or from that course material, whatever it is. And so you got to have a certain amount of humility, but that's hard to get through to guys.
So, you got to teach them, explain to them. You got to prepare them before they go off to classes outside of your home.
Right.
You know, the advantages of getting to know professors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our guys have learned to ask questions and to get to know the professors, to fall back in their office and talk to them.
I wish I had done
found
that.
Found the many benefits of it.
I so wish I had done that in college. But, I just thought, that's just propaganda. I didn't pay any attention to it. And I don't think my folks realized how disconnected I was because my grades were – you know, pretty good.
Yeah.
My grades are pretty good, all right. So they didn't worry me too much about it. But I wish I had done better at that. So, but part of that, too, is recognizing that, hey, I don't understand something, and it's not a shame to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do we get this? One of the things we have to kind of deal with our guys, especially when they get a little bit into high school years and you're giving them more independence, they could be drifting along for quite a while.
And they'll do everything to keep you from knowing.
And be, you know, missed a fundamental problem, fundamental concept. Struggle for a month.
Well, it happened to one of ours the other day, Hal. They came in, this person came in, who shall remain nameless to protect the guilty.
Yes.
Came in, and I said, have you finished your math? He said, yes, I finished my math.
Yes.
And I said, okay, well, bring it here, let me see it. And he blanched.
Uh-oh.
And I said, bring it here right now.
Gotcha.
And he came dragging in, and I found out he'd done about 2/3 of his math. I said, what did he do? He said, I couldn't remember how to do that.
Is the defendant in the courtroom?
And I said, why didn't you ask?
Mm-hmm.
And he just gaped at me. You know? So one thing you can do with boys, because, you know, when you get a bunch of children, you really can't grade all their work every day. It's impossible.
It is.
You know, there's
it's a burden. It's a burden, yeah.
And so what we tell ours to do is just, if you come across a problem, you just can't do it. Okay, write the number of the problem at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I do have time to go through it with you, later this week or whatever, maybe next week,
uh-huh.
we can go through and look at those problems, even if we don't have time to go through everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that solved a lot of problems right there because boys hate to ask for help. Another thing is, though, is you work toward understanding that there's no shame in not knowing. There's shame in not asking. You know, one of our sons went to one of the most elite private schools in the nation, colleges. And he saw kids flunk out because they wouldn't ask questions. And
well, they thought it was not cool.
Well, one of them told me, said, it's not cool for you to ask me questions, bro.
You're making us look bad.
Yeah, and John said, you know, does your dad know he's paying $52,000 a year for you not to understand things?
Really?
Yeah. No, we didn't pay that. He went on scholarship.
No, he went on scholarship. He wouldn't have been at that college. So.
Yeah.
So, but that, that is a life skill, being able to say, hey, I don't have the information that I need to do the thing that I need to do next. And there's no shame in saying, I want to get that information so I can be a success at what I've got to do. And I remember that was a big change when I got out into the work world after college and realized, you know, I was going into a programming type of position and realizing that I didn't get, it wasn't expected that I invent everything from a blank sheet of paper every time I approached a problem.
Yeah.
In fact, it was expected that I would find the closest solution and adapt it rather than inventing the wheel, making the same mistakes over, wasting time and effort. You know, there's a time when you have to be, you know, willing to step forward and say, I need something to move me along toward a goal, not just to, you know, not just to show off a little bit or to save face, but rather I got something I got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, well, you know, all of that stuff, things we have learned from homeschooling six boys.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to mention. We talked earlier, Hal, about what do you do if they're behind in reading or they're behind in language arts to keep them up. One thing that we found very helpful, I don't think we really mentioned, is audiobooks.
Yeah, I mentioned all the
Gia. Okay. Well, more than that, reading and free reading, reading novels and nonfiction, is important for giving kids the background of what they need to know. And we have used a lot of audiobooks, Sugar Creek Gang audiobooks, Henny audiobooks, all kinds of things like that, because hearing the written word, how it sounds,
right,
helps them so much in their reading comprehension, even if they can't read anything yet.
You know, I think one of the things that helped me more than just about anything else in becoming a writer was, for several years there in high school and in college and right out of college, I subscribed to National Review magazine. Okay, now you may not be a conservative, you may not be a fan of William F. Buckley or the rest of that, and that's fine. But take this into account. It's an extremely well-written publication, okay? It's not written at an eighth-grade level like USA Today, or I think USA Today actually comes in like a fifth-grade level. But it was very eloquent. It was very, very well-written. It had a challenging vocabulary. And reading that, because I wanted the information in it, reading
the moderator has left the conference.
Okay,
so we're
back on.
Yep.
All
right.
Okay.
Well, we're
I am
we're
so sorry,
here.
Folks.
Sorry about that.
Our internet just spectacularly went down for no apparent reason.
Okay. I'm not sure if we're coming through yet over here.
Mm-hmm.
I can't hear us.
Okay.
This is the input. Yes. Okay.
All right.
Now let's see. Do we have? Okay. There we are. Yeah.
Folks, I'm so sorry. Our internet just crashed here at our house for no apparent reason, and so we lost the connection. And in fact, we had to switch computers. But we're back,
mm-hmm.
and we've got just a couple of minutes. We want to finish up what we were talking about.
Right.
We're talking about using audiobooks to help boys learn to read before they can read.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was telling the story there. I think when we lost our connection that. I think one of the things which made me a better writer was for many years I was reading National Review magazine, which is very well written, has a high vocabulary, a complex sentence structure. It was a challenging thing to read. It was not like USA Today is written on like a fifth grade level. And reading something that was very well written kind of trained me to think that way when I thought about communicating. Well, you know what? If your son's grow up listening to complex sentence structure, challenging vocabulary, extended narratives, and lots of phrases and clauses and things, they're going to learn to see language and to comprehend language that way, so that even if they can't read very well or can't, you know, even begin to write, yet when that clicks, maybe when they're 10 or 11 or 12 years old, when they start to get those feet underneath them, then they will be able to pick it up and run.
Yeah.
They're not going to be at Dick and Jane level when they're 12 years old.
It's really amazing. One of the best things for that we have found are the G.A. Henney novels.
Yeah.
And in fact, we love them so much we started selling them on our site. You can go to raisingwillmen.com/Henty, H-E-N-T-Y.
Yeah.
Because he wrote over 100 years ago. He wrote with very complex language. But because he's writing about history and battles and battle plans and stuff, boys are fascinated, and so
right.
they listen to it. And it's mm-hmm. great for teaching reading comprehension. You know, homeschooling boys has been a blast. We have graduated three of ours.
Yeah.
We have three we're still teaching. And it has been a huge chunk of my life. We realized that this month that we've been homeschooling, actively, formally homeschooling, for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's true. It is. Two decades.
Wow. It's been a huge chunk of our life. It's been a hugely enjoyable chunk of our life. But it'll be a lot more enjoyable if you recognize that God made girls and guys differently. And when you adapt to that and you go with it and you enjoy it.
Just embrace it. Don't fight it. You know, don't say, oh, I wish he was like his sister. She's so easy to teach. Well,
or I think he must be a psychopath. He likes to play war. No, all boys like to play war.
Yeah, it's something about the male genes, okay? And so understanding your son, embracing the way God made him, and cooperating with God's developing plan in his life, rather than trying to mold him into something, which really he isn't, okay, it'll make you and him a lot happier.
Yeah.
And so we do appreciate you joining us on this. Now, do we have something scheduled for next week yet?
Yes, we do.
We
do have things scheduled for next week, and it is going to be a fun week.
Now, next week is going to be February the 3rd.
Yeah, 2nd, 3rd?
February 3rd is Monday.
Yes.
Okay? Because one thing, we're going to be announcing the winners of our door prizes for the
Celebrate 20,000 workshop that we recorded this afternoon.
That's right.
And it's really kind of a companion workshop to this one we just talked about.
Right.
This one is a more general one about parenting boys.
Yeah.
And you can still get in on that and hear that workshop, see us on video, and sign up for the door prizes, enter the drawings. Go to raisingwillmen.com/celebrate. Next week, we're going to be discussing how to be happily married while homeschooling.
That's right, because you know what? This is a great, big, huge task that you've undertaken, and it changes a lot of things, and you may not have thought about it. And so we're going to talk about some things that we've discovered along the route that you just kind of you need to make allowance for. And I think it'll be a useful time. And it's a fun time, too. We got some good stories about this. And then February 10th, that's 2 weeks from now, we're going to have our live call-in from our Facebook party celebrating the release of My Beloved and My Friend.
Yes.
And so we hope you'll join us for all of those things. And, you know, we appreciate your time here. There's many things that you could be doing, and we appreciate you sharing some of your day with us and hope that we'll become a regular part of your day. So as we crank up our outro music, we want to say you've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
We look forward to talking with you again soon.
Come back. Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.